You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Do we need an intro here, or is that the intro? Did I just do the intro?
You just did the intro.
Okay, very good. All right, let's get in.
What are we doing right now, Patrick?
We're going to talk a little bit about a premiere we have today that I'm excited to share with the world. For those of you that may remember, this is a band I tripped over completely by accident. Sort of a band camp, what would you call that? A happy accident. And really super impressed. And that was, what, 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
And since that time, they've just gotten better and better. I'm talking about Colonial Wound. And today, we're offering what? What are we offering? What are we giving the people?
Well, Colonial Wound is debuting their first full length titled Easy Laugh, coming out on Hex Records December 9th. On LP, CD, and digital. A couple different color vinyl options. A limited die-cut cover design for the first 100 copies. Kind of sick. So you're going to keep your eyes out for that. I don't know when it goes up for pre-order. I think very soon. I think the pre-order is going to go up today. So keep that up. 11:15, that's the day, right? This song's called Altar of Youth. Kind of cool. Band shows it. They want you to hear it. A band that all three of us have been stoked on since they came to the table, which is kind of awesome.
Wonderful band. Super great. Hopefully they'll get out there, tour a little bit more. They'll come up north to Northeast. Love to see them. Yeah.
Shout out Colonial Wound and everybody.
Shout out Hex Records.
Shout out Hex Records. This track is Altar of Youth off of Easy Laugh. Go order it today. Hex Records.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
Most professional podcast in the game.
Seriously.
The hardcore podcast. We spent 48 minutes just chit-chatting.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh. Yeah. Yo, everybody. Yeah, again, everybody, it's the professionalism here is multifold because we try to do well on the air, but we also while still being honest, we dodge the more salacious shit because it's not our place to say, and B, also because it's not really necessarily good for hardcore for somebody to be dropping, you know, the truth bombs are fine. The truth nukes are not good. You know, I mean, there's got to be a moratorium on truth nukes. So, let's do some.
How do the truth nukes feel, Tom? When you can feel it in the back of his throat, going, I'm just in a different place on this from Patrick.
It makes me.
You felt it on that last chat convo. He was dying to be like, I'm just in a different place on this.
Yeah, just, you know,
I could feel it now, in his throat, and he held back. He held back because he knew there was some triggered emotional responses.
You can tell. Like, that was like him when he was like, "Yeah, I mean, I don't really see, you know, Christianity being that big of a thing in America." I'm like, "You don't live here anymore, you fucking dick." It was the same idea. It was just kind of like, you know what? I'm a different person now, man. I have to shake out my shoes to make sure there's no scorpions.
we'll get into it. I went to a show last night. I was with some real Topeka people, or real Perth people as it is. Okay, let's do ad reads.
Let's do some ad reads. Ad reads. Shout out and thank you to Deathwish Inc.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out and thank you to Nugenix Total T.
Oh, shout out Nugenix. Shout out
to my boy Frank Thomas, my man Doug Flutie.
Shout out and thanks to Live a Lie.
Brian Bosworth.
Shout out.
She'll like it too.
To Adam and Eve.
Oh, wow. We're really going in. Okay. Yeah.
We're just getting the true depths of where we're going here.
Okay. Yeah. Shout out to them all. Yeah.
Shout out to Closed Casket Activities.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Shout out to Burger King.
Burger King. You know what? I like the Burger Kings in the Singapore airport because I don't got to worry. You know, cheese is not popular in Asia, so I don't got to worry about them putting it on my shit.
Jesus Christ. Please put that on a drug church shirt. Cheese is not popular in Asia. And last, certainly not least, thanks and shout out to Run for Cover Records.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to skip over the King, the couple, the Total T, and our close personal friends, Deathwish, and To Live a Lie today to talk about Closed Casket Activities and Run for Cover. Patrick, start us off at closedcasketactivities.com. Hit us with this read.
Oh, okay. I'm up.
On that pro shit. Let's go.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'm real pro. So Closed Casket Activities, always staying busy, had a little bit of an announcement this past week. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, they did.
Now, maybe you could tell me what record this is. Let's see.
Well, Closed Casket Activities announced the debut and first release here for with Closed Casket by the band Scalp from California. This is called Black Tar LP, coming shipping as of January, which, by the way, it's shipping January 15th. That is only 2 months from right now. That is wild. So 2023 is creeping on us, people. This is a heavy band who kind of finds themselves in that crosshairs of metal and hardcore, some power violence, definitely some death metal and some sludge in there. And you may or may not know that they went and hit the Pit recording studio with Taylor Young.
I'm looking at they have excellent shirts. I'll just say I approve of these shirts.
Approve of the shirts, approve of the visuals overall. Really, really dig it, actually.
I did not know the Dead Body put a record out. I thought that was just a fucking...
Yes. We talked about it on this podcast.
Did we?
Uh-huh. Yes. On Closed Casket Activities, Dead Body put out a record, The Requiem. And the more interesting part about this is that apparently... Dead Body's Instagram is at Dead Fucking Body, and high school football players are tagging the band. Like, here's a picture of me smashing someone into the ground. Yeah,
like some dude laid out after a tackle.
Yeah, and it's tagged a person Dead Fucking Body. So
they went viral.
Yeah, kudos.
I did not know. I just didn't know there was a full record here. Apparently, I'm not paying very good attention, or I'm just a, and it's selling well because two of the colors are gone. Okay, well, all right. Now it's become an ad read for Dead Body.
Dead Body, get that. Scalp, get that. Yo, there's a lot on the closed casket. Look, pulling back from the ad read, it's straight up impressive to see what Justin does with closed casket activities. I think if you were someone aspiring to do a label, I don't care what you're into, it could be whatever, literally could be the opposite of closed casket activities. You should look at what he does, how he does it, and the consistency and diversity of what he's doing. Because in the past handful of releases, we have Scalp, we have Dead Body, we have Fleshwater. You know what I mean? And these are all really different things. The Intensive Care record. It's just really cool. We're all lucky to have him as a friend and a supporter. But even if he wasn't, even if he told us to go fuck off tomorrow, it's straight up impressive what he's doing. And the Fleshwater record, it's already well into its second press. Oh, yeah. They've already sold out a bunch of the second press. So, yeah, pay attention to what he's doing. He does cool stuff, likes cool music. Check it out.
Also, pick up this this Dead Body 25-color shirt. Because it costs a fucking arm and a leg to print. So go buy this one.
Closedcasketactivities.com. Buy the expensive to make shirt because it was expensive to make.
Only $25 for the shirt that probably cost $27 to make. So pick that up. Okay.
We're going to go over to Run for Cover Records.
Let's do it.
Runforcoverrecords.com. Yo, another record that was released just this past week, Narrowhead Moments of Clarity. Go in, PK, Tom.
Oh, this is me again? Okay.
You, yeah, you dropped them off. Tom, is it safe to say that Patrick did a bad job on his Scalp ad read?
Yes.
Are you all what? Right. So fuck, I'm throwing up oops here.
Hey,
Bob literally was like, how about you talking about it? And you literally were able to turn around in three sentences and be like, Bob, how about you tell me about it?
You know what? That's just good politics.
You stumbled. It was the equivalent of Luka Doncic passing the ball to any other teammate, dropping the ball, picking up and scrambling to pass it back to him, which is what you did. So we're good. We scored the basket.
All right, listen. There's a new Narrowhead record. The Narrowhead, for people that don't know, at their best to me, they have some Helmet elements, but the elements that people like more than the elements that I like are kind of right in that alternative. Let's say, what is that? Early 2000s, Smashing Pumpkins influences are present. I've only heard the singles. I think the first single is some of the strongest work that they've done. It is a lot of our listeners, regardless of age, are going to like this one because if you're of a certain age, you're going to get the references and they're going to resonate with you. If you're younger than that, it'll sound pretty fresh. So there's no way to lose with this and it's worth checking out. Best ad read we've ever had.
Tight.
Incorrect. Can you, Tom, I want you to check this. Patrick, where is Narrowhead from?
It's in Texas. I'm going to say Dallas.
Oh, okay, Fort you got that? Worth. No, they're from Houston.
Fuck.
Area.
Well, that's okay. But you know what?
They got Texas, and that was all I was looking for.
They wish they were from Dallas, Fort Worth. It's better.
Shout out to this. I agree. I think it's somewhere between some of the more like alt-leaning post-hardcore of the early 2000s and then the heavier post-hardcore. Somewhere between Helmet and Rival Schools, you'll find Narrowhead. And that doesn't make it Quicksand. It makes it something else. Runforcoverrecords.com. Go get it. Couple limited versions left, but they're going fast. Oh, guys, you want to jump on my foot? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna do another good ad read. Everybody, go check out my Kickstarter if you are into pornography. This is adult comics.
It's called OnlyFans, Pat.
Yeah, this is adult comics.
Avert your eyes.
Yeah, Don't Avert Your Eyes is the project name. It is years ago, did a book called There's Nothing There, horror book. It has its fans. The publisher came and said, how would you feel about going a little harder? And me and my co-creator, Maria, jumped at that, and we got some talent together, and it is just a really solid, I would say, high quality adult book, which is not something that you see a ton of. You see some adult books, and no disrespect to them, but I would like to add a little quality control to actual smut. So this
I have two questions.
Yes.
Is it actual porn?
Well, it's a comic book, so it depends on your idea of porn.
It's illustrated.
But yeah, but there is...
Also, I mean, that's like the thesis. Like, that's like the underlying...
Well, okay, let me say this. The very...
Like the Felix the Cat thing that they showed in
Fritz. So
was it Fritz the Cat that was the porn?
Yeah, so yeah. Felix is a different animal. Felix is also a cat. He's also a cat, but...
Felix. Not a different animal.
Well, it's different. So here's the thing. Books that do really well on Kickstarter are tease books, right? Books that have like buxom ladies and maybe some suggestion that there's some sex, but actual adult books, I'm not saying I'm pioneering anything, but I'm saying that adult books were popular in comic book stores in the 90s and now they are not. So they've migrated to Kickstarter. I went a little hard. And there is penetration. There is, so for people that have concerns, there's no like sexual violence or anything like that. But it's
just superheroes doing it.
Not superheroes. It's a horror book, so there's horror elements. But there's also some, you know, some jizz, I guess, whatever. But it's a.
Can I ask you a question? I have another question. Yeah, it's please. A business question.
No, I like.
I'm it. Stepping all over your read. Yeah,
please.
I'm sorry.
No, please.
Love it. Love it.
Explain this to me, because I haven't read a comic book since I was like. Child.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, I've bought yours and I've read yours, so that Thank doesn't you. Really totally count.
Sure.
But that was more out of support. I wouldn't have liked. I don't. I've been to like Forbidden Planet once.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
You know,
very cool.
So if a public like so, this is the in my head, this is the equivalent of a label coming to you and being like, "Hey, you want to do like a heavy metal record?" And you're like, "Cool." And you're like, and then they go, "All right, cool. Go raise the money for it."
No.
How
so,
is this like?
No. Okay, so
different beast.
So that's actually a good question. So Kickstarter is being used in the way that Kickstarter asks that you do not use them, which is as a fulfillment service. So yes. The way that it works basically is this publisher actually paid for everything up front. So even if we do not, if we don't fulfill this goal, which
by the way, it already has happened. Yeah,
yeah, right. Oh. But if we didn't fulfill it. This publisher would still be on the line for that monies. Kickstarter is just another avenue by which new people can discover your work because there are people that use it in the same way that people use merch stores where they're like, oh, I didn't realize I needed I came for here for a terror shirt. I didn't realize I needed a scalp shirt. I'm going to purchase it. So there's that aspect, which is kind of like digital storefront element that is needed because comics don't necessarily have that. There's Comixology, but it's a disaster. This is kind of, if you want physical product, this is kind of that place that you might trip over something you enjoy. And also the people that are really successful at this are, they kind of build a community around it where they make the people that back it feel like they're part of something. There's like Brian Polito has been very immensely successful with this. He just funded something for like, I don't know, fucking probably $500,000. At any rate, it's just another way of doing things and circumventing the direct market, which is comic book stores, not because I want to or because this publisher wants to, but simply because
this type of book is not really finding space on the shelf.
Right. There's a lot of, you know, at one time it used to be the Christians would come in and bitch at you, and now it's a different type of person that comes in and bitches at you. But there's always somebody that comes in and bitches at you. So basically, this is a space where you can have this book ordered to your house, and you don't have to walk into a comic book store and necessarily be like, "Hey, can I have the one with the penetration and the cum and the, you know what I mean?" So there's that element, but there's also the element of. It's just these books don't get racked very often anymore. They don't get shelved. So,
just to go through that, just to cut it, Don't Avert Your Eyes Kickstarter. If you search Patrick Kinlan, Don't Avert Your Eyes Kickstarter, you will find it. I definitely recommend you check it out. If you are looking for something that is adult entertainment with that edge to it, but that also is kind of an occult ritual, eyes wide shut, kind of thing. There you go.
There you go.
Tom, the way I'll put it is this is everything Pat was saying about his own book is true. This was something that as children, probably both Patrick and I were aware of, they had at comic book stores in the 80s and into the 90s for sure. But at some point that section just disappeared.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like that's, it's just, you know, it is what it is. But I'm excited. I haven't read any of this. I'm excited that Patrick's trying this. I think it's kind of bold and weird, but that's right up his alley. So everybody should check it out. If it sounds curious, if you're curious, go look at the website, subscribe to his newsletter. Do that. It's cool.
Cool. All right, let's talk some hardcore.
How are you doing? How are we feeling, guys? How are we doing? We're good? Feeling
I'm good. You want to hear a pit report? I went to a show last night.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Went to Extortion at the home of Extortion. For people that don't know, Extortion is one of the Australia bands that kind of penetrated the U.S. Distro-wise. You remember these records, correct, fellas?
Yes. Yep, they did. They did very well.
Yeah. So
faster stuff, people.
Yeah. So it's faster stuff, aggressive. You could say, you know, for our listeners, if you if you liked the first Regional Justice Center record, you like Extortion. It is definitely power violence leaning, if not power violence. Always had a cool look to them too. Cool name, cool look. I didn't realize the guy that responsible for the look is the singer. There's been a show or a venue in Perth. I'm just going to call it 208 because I don't know if it has a fucking name, but it is a house that has been having shows for 20 years, 21 years. And
love that.
Went last night. The show was People Problem, which is a band that hadn't played for a few years. Very aggressive. Second band, I don't want to fuck up their name. I think it was Drowning Horse. Total doom. One of those bands that like clearly cares about how they sound, no matter what room they're in, you know? I thought I was not going to enjoy it because people were like, yeah, they play 15-minute doom songs. And I was like, but it was actually really great. And then Extortion, only got to hang for two songs because the room is, I would say, less than 50 people max sort of room. And I was feeling a little bit anxious. What I heard was fucking great. And the vibe was good. They had just played a festival the night before, and this was kind of the, for the heads, sort of show in the place that, the gentleman who brought me, lost his virginity at this venue. So, it should give you an idea of how like storied a space this is. And it was fun. And I got to talk to some real Perth people and about my life here in Australia. We got people there that listened to us and recognized me from the podcast. And shout out to them. That's really nice.
Wow.
But it was fun. It was like a, you know, three-band show. Started at 7 p.m. on a Sunday. And nobody went long. Nobody kind of abused your time. It was, hey, everybody, let's get into that house that we've had shows for so long and fucking play the show.
That's cool. What's the what do you call like a person from Perth?
Oh,
Perthian.
I would call them a
Perthian.
A Perthian. A Perthian. Yes, I would call them a Perthian. Wikipedia always has the
bad joke.
You know, really good, guys. It's 9:12 p.m. on a Sunday.
Bad
night.
Jokes.
I'm gonna look it up because I think Wikipedia actually tells you what the what's that word called for what you call somebody. It begins with a D, right?
It is.
Yes.
You're right.
Well, I'll look it up.
Like New York, so while you're looking,
California.
Up, yeah.
Yes.
You know, like
they're D. We'll call it
Liverpudlian.
Their title. So I have a question because you brought up an interesting thing, the longstanding house, the longstanding DIY venue.
Mm-hmm.
Is this How many of these do we think exist? I think they're endangered. They're not extinct. We can confirm, not extinct. Are they endangered? Are they on the protected list? You know, that's like one step up from endangered. Where are we at? We're in a post-MRR world, guys. Does the DIY venue still hold that shrine aura like it did? And how often do you come across them? And like, I'm talking longstanding. I'm talking the, and just to clarify, yeah, this could be Gilman Street. Yeah, this could be an art space. Yeah, this could be that VFW that just has always allowed shows for however long, and you can rely on it. It could be the house, like you were saying, this 208 spot. But how many are left?
I mean, I'm sure that there's some that I do not know, obviously.
Oh, I mean, the question is posed also to the audience, the listener, to think about their experience. So we're not going to get everybody's. We don't know all the cities and everything. But I think it's an interesting conversation to have and think about, like, how many of these are left?
You guys are familiar with the Legion of Doom?
Yep.
Sure. In Columbus, Ohio. Yep. Still going, yep. By the way.
Yep.
So now, I literally played a show there 25 years ago.
Right.
In the basement of a house, random house in Columbus, in a college town.
Wow.
Now, yeah. It was literally, it was two tours meeting up. It was Silent Majority, Indecision, Millhouse, Dillinger Escape Plan, Jesuit, and Botch. In a basement. Right.
That's cool. Right.
But now, I mean, think about how many people have come and gone from, you know, that lived in the Legion of Doom.
Oh, right.
You
have to have some turnover spot. Every year. Right, right,
You have to, but like everyone's got to be in agreement that this is the thing that we're going to continue. Like, feel like house shows like that, or like venues like that. I mean, that's probably outlasted every club in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's nearly impossible for a house to be an ongoing thing because, you know, like one of the folks that, do you remember that band Inept?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sure from Ohio. So, Scotty from Inept booked that show. But like, I mean, he's like probably my age. Like, I don't know if I was 47 years old, I'd still be living in the same punk house.
Well, first thing first, no shade. That's just different people choosing different lifestyles. You know what I mean?
No, he doesn't live there either. I'm just shade. Like, there's no. He's moved. But I'm saying like, who's the consistent person to make sure that that continues? I think that's like, for them to still be going is incredible because I think it's so kind of transitory. I mean, think how many times you've moved.
For anyone on this line, we've all moved a lot.
You know what I'm saying? Like, do you imagine being like, you're moving, but whoever takes your apartment or takes your house, you got to be like, you're moving in here. The rent's X amount.
Here's the
like,
deal, right?
There's going to be folks playing music in your basement, you know, anywhere between, you know, 1 and 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's nuts. That's nuts. And I think it's amazing, but I feel like that's a
lifestyle. That's trend.
Right. And right. Well, so
that's the thing that's going away.
Yeah. And there's just, how do we do that? Like this conversation, let's parse it a little bit because you took us on a little bit of a house show thing. And I want to talk about that for a minute, but then I want to get back to the like bigger umbrella of DIY spaces and the like longstanding ones and which ones we can even come to because like, I thought of it because not long ago, I mean, it was like probably a year and a half or 2 years ago, I walked by where ABC No Rio was, and it's just a hole in the ground. It has been a hole in the ground for years now, you know?
But I think there's still a sign that says we're coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it says it. We'll see. But it's been years, I mean, Michael Jordan came back. He unretired, but there's that gap. This is going to be a gap, and we'll see what it's like when it comes back and if it can come back in the same form, which loops back to the house show. You're right. House shows existed in this netherworld. And, like, by the way, I know there's still some places. I believe there's a spot in Denver where they're house shows, but they're, like, in the interior of a house. So it's not like, oh, you go down to the basement. It's like, no, you go in, and it's sort of like they have a room that's inside the house that's sort of boxed in this way that it's sort of not soundproof, but it's private. You know what I mean? So you can't, wow. It's like, it's not known totally. So they have all the like, hey, no hanging out outside, no loitering around here. You can go in the backyard, right. But you got, you know, all the fun house though, show stuff.
I'm thinking about the place in Brooklyn. I won't mention the address, but it's known by its address.
Yep. And I think it's done. I think it's finally done.
Someone went to a show there like a week ago.
Oh, okay. Well then,
I mean, hey, different, but I mean, everyone lives in different apartments. It probably isn't the
538,
same.
Right?
Yeah.
We don't have to go beyond that. But yeah. But that's all right. But yeah, it's known in this space. There's these places, right? House shows. You're not wrong. There's an evolution of that. But I think at times before now, they floated in this space of, well, people in hardcore know this place exists. And, you know, there's the whole Ask a Punk, and maybe we can talk about that thing that happens. But now the visibility, the way these things get out there, we were having a conversation about how much visibility matters on videos and how much visibility on a video can help a band. Yo, let alone a venue. Someone sees a show is lit at this DIY spot, people want to go there.
Yep.
That Gulch right. House show, I bet if I lived an hour from there, I'd be like, yo, when's the next show happening there? It looked fun. Right. So, but now...
But someone's going to fuck it up.
You know, landlord can search Google and go, wait, why is my address being tagged here? Oh, what is this? You know, oh, all of a sudden that you can, it goes beyond the like noise complaint from a random neighbor. It's now like you have to be secretive, and I don't know how that lasts. And then you add in the transitory nature of a house show and a house show space. You know what I mean? That's just some point somebody decides they're going to have a kid and they need everybody to move out.
Yep.
Or, hey, we're all moving out. The main dude who booked shows here, that dude who used to book shows but's tired of it, and the dude who really did a great job, he's been gone for 3 years. So it's sort of this weird kind of like passing the baton energy, and that extends to all these DIY spaces. But house shows are kind of really specifically like there's a kind of movement, and it's like, okay, how long can this part like possibly last? And that's okay. Like, to be honest, I'm a believer in finite items. I don't think that everything has to last forever.
That's true.
So, but DIY spaces in general, I think we're seeing new ones pop up. But I can tell you, it's been a long time since there were consistent ones in New Jersey. You know, it's clubs. There's some bars. There's currently a church that a homie does some shows at, but it's
in Asbury,
the weird, right? Yep, it's the weird church situation, and you know it's actually really cool. But you wonder about that. It's only just started, but for a long time there was a break. So I wonder about that, and I wonder for you guys how do you feel? Do you vibe on that? Do you care? Does it matter? Should anyone care?
Two things. I have a question.
Please.
And just like a statement. All right. My statement as from either playing shows or going to shows, to me, when I think of hardcore, there are very few like things that I remember more vividly and more positively than that feeling of like getting out of the car in the middle of fucking nowhere. Right. And like walking up to the random, you know, VFW hall, whatever, and like that door opening, and you for a second you hear music,
mm-hmm. Right? Yeah,
like one of my most favorite. Like a club will never have that. Like that feeling of being like I'm parked in the grass and I'm walking up, and there's people outside having a cigarette, and like I hope I have the right, you know, exact change, and you know, and just hearing like the music in like the distance. There's almost nothing cooler to me. And punk and hardcore than that. But so my question is, when it comes to stuff like this, do you think the DIY venue struggles? Do you think it's partially to blame? The bands are partially to blame for this, because people, like, if I know I'm going to be on the hook for a chunk of change, I'd rather share some of that that risk with this venue that has, you know, Taylor Swift nights on Thursdays that'll be able to take the hit rather than being like, I would love to, you know, have Drug Church play, you know, play the church in Asbury, but you know, they asked for like $30,000.
Yeah, I know.
I sure do.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to take the risk. I might be able to do that, but what if I don't? And then, you know, Pat's like walking me to the ATM.
Right. No, I mean, there's always that fear of a guy like Patrick grabbing your hand and be like, we're going for a walk.
Yeah. Right. No, he puts his hand in his pocket like he's got a gun, but you know he doesn't. But yeah. Like, you have to play along because, you know.
It's a fucking peanut chew. I was going to say Snickers.
Goldberg,
you know.
Peanut. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? I think that hurts because there's guarantees now that not every band, like in the 90s, early aughts, maybe late 90s at least, like, you know, Earth Crisis had a guarantee. Harvest didn't have a guarantee.
Right. You know, it's so funny because it was literally just like, Earth Crisis had a guarantee. Strife had a guarantee. But Strife had a guarantee and people made t-shirts dissing it. Like that's how there was a strong feeling about that. Now, a significant portion of the bands that we talk about on this podcast have guarantees and have booking agents, right? And you're not wrong. That risk aversion from both sides, right? Like, Patrick, we'd like to pull you into the conversation for a second.
Please.
Who's more likely to not have your money at the end of the night? The guy who works at the Live Nation venue or the incredible sweetheart kid who's booking at his local DIY spot, but he probably charged $5 too little and certainly wasn't good keeping that money and definitely let in all his friends for free.
Yeah, Terry Mashalot is a wonderful, unreliable person.
Right. And you know, that happens. And it's kind of a beautiful thing, but it also is like, it's a tone and tenor of things. Tom, I'm so glad you brought that up because I didn't think about that. It's so then you wonder, okay, so Band X plays the DIY spot and let's just make up a place. Let's call it Jamestown, Wyoming. Mm. Plays Jamestown, Wyoming at the DIY cool spot. Some kids are there. It's pretty good, but maybe it didn't get promoted. Whatever weird circumstances, it's not quite as full as the promoter hoped it would be, so his math's not there, and the money's not right. So the next time that booking agent has his band, we'll call him Church Drugs, come through, the booking agent of Church Drugs is going to be like, you know, Terry Mashalot, super, super good guy. Liked emailing with him. He was really kind. He apologized about it. But I know Big Willie over at Live Nation venue X in Cheyenne is going to get me my money. He's going to get these guys their money. So that's where the show goes. And how often does that have to happen for a Jamestown, Wyoming made-up place scene? Dry on the vine and disappear.
It can certainly happen. Although, you know, a lot of times those places become the home of something like smaller touring acts that also really need shows. So a thing that we don't talk about very often on this is that kind of aspiring pro core, you know, like where it's you're not quite at the level where you need an agent, but somebody's acting in the capacity of an agent, or
you got your ear and is doing it, whether they're in your pocket or they're not.
Yeah, so that person in a lot of ways is fortunate. You know, we could hear dissenting opinions about how having an agent too young is a problem and how you present. And I'd listen to all that, but I hate booking my own shows. So to hell with it all. But I will say that the people that's not an option currently or will never be an option simply because you play a style of hardcore that is just, there's no saleability there. Nobody, you know, it's by nature, it's small. Or let's say that you're just very committed to the DIY value of not having a booking agent. Let's say you just hate fucking. I run into kids that don't have booking agents that most certainly should. You know what I mean? They just, it's how they choose to operate. They don't want to give somebody else their money. There's a listener of this podcast who is, his band is most certainly missing out on a lot of fucking money because he's handling, he's handling his business himself. And that's fine. That's his choice. But the you know, let's say you're not there. There's still got to be a place for you to play. And if that's the basement in Fort Wayne, Indiana, you know what I mean? And it's a Thursday night. And you know that Monday night they're also going to have a show because that's where people, that's when people go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, is not on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Look, that still gets you to the next spot, and not for nothing, those scenes are in their own ways quite important. You know what I mean? So
that is the shit that I live on. That's the shit I love.
Yeah. So
and it's weird, you know. I think that's, so there's a weird discrepancy too, and I don't want to step on it, but how do you can you enjoy the pro core world while you're a basement dude?
Oh,
you know what I mean? This
ties into a thing I wanted to celebrate last night. Talking to somebody last night, they said, "Oh yeah, I jumped off the." Some people know who I'm talking about. He said, "I remember 20 years ago, I jumped off the stairs here. I was the first stair diver. I was wearing a rainbow onesie, and this was during the era where everybody was wearing Black Terror shirts." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting. I didn't peg this for a Black Terror shirt venue, you know, because everybody I was around, it was an extortion show. So there was a lot of kind of."
At that time, it was Black DS-13 shirts. And then you go to the club and that's the Black Terror shirts.
So that's what I thought. But that's how it was in the United States. But as this person pointed out, because I said that, and they said, no. Perth is a small scene. Everybody was welcome at this venue. You know what I mean? Like, so it was always open to every type of show, which in my view, probably kept it alive for 20 years.
So as someone who has had the privilege to live in New Jersey,
which is weird. Yeah, that's what people say.
Well, that's what everybody says. New Jersey and California is what I was going to say.
Okay.
Two places that I can't describe as small scenes.
No.
You know what I mean? New Jersey, ebb and flow, whatever, but it always is going to get a show. Or you can always go to New York. You can always go to Philadelphia, whatever. Not a small scene. And so you had the buckets appear. These are the kind of shows this person goes to. These are the kind of shows this person goes to. It isn't the Jamestown, Wyoming. Yeah, I book a venue, but yeah, I fucking love Comeback Kid. You know what I mean? And I remember there was an incongruity to that when I started meeting more people, where it's like, oh yeah, this kid books garage shows in Fresno, but it's not like dirt punk bands. It's whatever. You know what I mean? And you start to see, oh, there's a blending of these lines, and these lines are something I make up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You make them up yourself. And it's kind of awesome when you see that they don't strictly exist everywhere, and that it doesn't have to exist at all unless you want it to. And it kind of sucks if you want it to.
It's a privilege / problem of big scenes.
Correct.
I mean, think about stuff that happened in New Brunswick or a certain thing.
Absolutely. And then it evolved and changed at different times. Yeah.
Right. But then there were places down the shore that totally different group of people.
I mean, yo, look, like, let me, I move out of New Jersey in 2003, August 03. I'm in California. After I move, there was a shore scene, which is like Monmouth and Ocean County. Further south of that, that's like Philadelphia stuff. You know, that all those kids would go to Philly shows and we're all part of that or not. And to be honest, pretty small scene in my awareness. No offense meant. Then you have the Edison scene, which is like Mongoloids, kids, all this stuff. And there was a lot. There was this whole kind of like central North Jersey thing. Edison is probably 15 minutes from New Brunswick. And New Brunswick had a completely separate thing going on at that time. It was just totally separate. There was interaction between those scenes, but they were separate things. And that's not even to go into the separation between, say, the New Brunswick or Stelton Church shows or any of the shows down at the shore and shows that were happening at some of the big clubs, the club shows, which drew a totally different audience that was sort of separate too. So you're totally right. Complete privilege thing. And you can parallel it in other big scene places, Southern California. There's a time when the Coos Cafe scene and the Showcase Theater scene were not different, but then they start to feel different. And then it's like, well, there's the Coos thing and that goes off. And you know, before that there were other DIY venues and there's the Showcase.
Smell, right?
The smell was, oh, the smell's been a longstanding one. And then there's the Glass House, you know what I mean? And then it's like, well,
right,
if you're a Glass House kid, the Showcase feels like you're really on that underground shit. But if you're a Showcase kid and you're into Coos, you're like, no, no, that's the underground shit. And if you're a Coos kid, then you're like, no, I saw Sex Vid at this abandoned office space to play to 15 people in Costa Mesa. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these different levels of it. But in reality, like, you're just, you know, there's just different thresholds. But to me, that DIY venue thing is kind of important because of a thing Patrick said, which is that, like, that level below the club. And I don't want to come off the wrong way. I love a lot of these bands who are playing clubs right now. I think that's kind of where hardcore is. It's booming. It's playing big spots. It's getting bigger money than a DIY space might be able to do a lot of times speaking. Shout out to the scenes that are not having to rely on that. But I fear a place where the only venues are these big venues. The only venues are ones that have a bar that require it, that there are no all ages options. And I think that's something we're starting to see. That is on the endangered list. I think that's full on. Like, you got it in some places, and then there's other places where it doesn't exist.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein, Plus, or... are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code AXETOGRIND50, that's numeral 50, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXETOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXETOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Doesn't exist. Yeah, you know, I do think that there's probably – I think that the Live Nation AEG sort of, you know, the fear that a lot of people have and other people have none, which I think is more alarming in some ways. But whatever. I think that some of it is overblown because it's – the ship has to right itself at some point, right? I think that there's going to be a pushback. I think that there, you've talked about it before on this podcast. There is, we're going to see, they're not going to be long-lived. They so rarely are. But there's a lot of good bands that are not at the club level, or again, maybe don't want to drown on the club level, because this is another thing, everybody. You might, somebody might book you, but if you know that you're worth fucking three tickets in that town, it's kind of better to play the basement. You know, like, it's like, let's not waste everybody's fucking time and resources and have, I've played shows where they had a fucking lighting guy to have me play in front of fucking eight people. You know what I mean?
You only get one bite at that apple. You're not getting that next.
Yes. Just play the fucking basement. And I get it. You get the, you take the shows that you, that you're offered. I get it. But right. I think that, and look, we could talk about this. This is impacting my life right now. And people that are listening to this are going to know what I'm talking about soon as it's announced, but doing some planning, some big shows, and the other bands, every band has specifics, you know, things that matter to them about these venues.
Just say it. It's Blink 182. It's
okay. Blink 182.
The Drug Church Blink 182 club shows. Yeah. They just they're like, no, man, we're going to do Che. You
yeah. The Pensacola VFW is or bust. So yeah, it's, you know, I think that there is going to be venues for but it's rough to talk about because we don't want to call them the C tier bands because they're not C tier quality.
No,
they're just not. They're not playing those venues yet. That's it.
Or don't have aspirations to that. I think I've referenced the Unlawful Assembly stuff a few times on here. I hope everybody's checking it out. One of the band's Innuendo is playing in New Brunswick tomorrow night at a basement. Yo, that's where they should be playing. That's a cool spot for them. Like, if they were playing
Club
Cricket Club. Yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like, yo, that's weird. That sort of sucks. Like, what the hell is that? But they're playing a cool spot. I bet that show's going to be lit. If I can, as a fucking adult father of two, sneak off and go to that show, I'm gonna go. But it is, you're not wrong. Like, so there's the bands who it would feel like I said, incongruous to be playing a large club if you're hardcore. Like, the reality of hardcore is we're three jamokes on this show talking about bands that sometimes only, you know, another 150 dudes have heard before. At this point, you know, and I don't say that disparaging. I say that like, because hardcore is cool as shit like that. It is cool. Don't matter that the Spotify streams are 10 people monthly. I think this is great and I want to shout it out, you know?
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that every band's going to go do fucking full club numbers. And that's not what hardcore is. And that's why the DIY, weird art space shows are cool. I say this in like a sincere way. I made reference to that Sexvid show. I thought Sexvid was fine. They were cool. Cool band. None of their records ever totally hit it out of the park for me, but I thought they were fine. I got to see them playing Costa Mesa in front of 15 people, and it was awesome. The way that you heard about them at the time, however, based on like selling a 7-inch out of 500, but everybody was talking about this band. They were kind of hot. They were hip, etc. You would have thought they were going to play to 250 people, but that's just not what it is. It's just not. And that's not to say that playing to 15 to 20 to 30 people in this fucking tiny room was a disappointment. I don't think so. If it was, they certainly didn't play like it, and it was awesome. And that's the energy. And Tom, you've talked about this from touring with Indecision way, way back. That, like, yeah, you played a bunch of shows with Milhouse, with Silent Majority, and you say Silent Majority, Indecision, Milhouse, you do that show tomorrow on Long Island, there's 1,000 people there, you know what I mean? Like, it's a big show. And you're talking about, like, yeah, we'd roll up to a venue in, you know, Nowheresville and play to 8 people. That's what happens. It's not like, you know, so I don't know. I just think if the DIY spaces go, it disables some things, and I fear that. And I don't know. It's something that's been chewing.
That's how this is built.
Right.
That's how Black Flag did it. They didn't fucking go from club to club.
Well, they'd hit a club, but then it would be of like, course. Oh, there's no clubs here. I think
that's part and parcel.
Right.
You're not doing a fucking, other than ABC, like if you come into New York City, you play CBGBs.
Right.
Or you play fucking whatever the hell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and even, so two things with that. One thing, and Pat can probably talk to this as much as anybody.
Sure.
There's nothing worse in the world than showing up at a city and someone going, why the fuck are you guys playing here?
I don't want to hear it.
Oh,
it's, like, yeah, you guys should play blah, 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 worst thing ever.
Yeah, I break out the Bluetooth speaker boombox and just blast. I don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? I can't.
It's brutal. It's so brutal. It's so disheartening. But I think talking about places like CB's, even places like that are going away.
Right.
Like independent venues, right? Like everything is owned by a larger entity.
Independent, you know, like, independent venues that are proper venues. So what we'll probably end up seeing is a lot more bars doing shows, which is has its own problems, because if you can't, if you have no separate venue space, then in many states it basically means that you're a bar band now, and
hardcore, because playing a bar, 19 drunks could punch each other in the face. They're not shutting down the bar.
Mm-hmm.
One hardcore kid gets in a fight with another one, you're never having a show there again.
The bar in Schenectady, where they've had like 3 shootings in the past 5 months.
So yeah, they ain't closing, but like Drug Church plays there and there's a mosh skirmish, and you're never hearing from it again.
Yep. I mean, look, it's a precarious walk, right? Like this, I've played venues where I've been really sad at the end of the night because I feel like the venue is in danger, you know? And that makes me anxious, because I don't want, even though it wasn't my, I didn't destroy the fucking toilet, you know what I mean? It wasn't my fucking fault, but it still makes me sad because, you know, those are the shows that help shape a person's tastes as they are young and are starting to grow up. Like we all went to those shows, and it's, and Tom, your situation is actually interesting because ABC is probably the closest that New York had for a long time until the Brooklyn thing started becoming more and more popular, you know?
So, yeah. I mean, Long Island was never clubs. Like sometimes like BOD would play clubs, but like, you know, like Silent Majority, like Mind of a Matter, all those bands, they play like the Roxy or whatever on Long Island. But most of the time after probably like mid-90s, it was only spots that people found, catering halls and fucking, you know, like, DFW halls. There was that place, Free Space, out on the East End of Long Island that did like the was like a fully DIY spot. Like,
yeah,
you know, no, I mean, that was my experience. But I mean, even in New York, even at New York's lowest points, like you can't really fucking have a DIY venue, you know, until folks started moving into Brooklyn, like Manhattan. Other than it's pretty difficult to find
like,
a place.
Like we're literally talking about C Squat, which is a specific kind of thing.
Right.
And like ABC was created as this odd art space because somebody scratched the thought together to make it what it was. And even that, it was, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of ABC No Rio. It seemed like it was always on life support. Like there were always hey, things are going to fall apart here.
And I forgot C Squat. That counts. But I will also say that as a guy who lived in New York for on and off for years, it didn't have the most welcoming vibe.
You weren't having fucking, you know, hardcore bands there necessarily. It was a lot of more punkish, right? Like, where like Tribes of Neurot would play or something, like, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
but I think, cause I remember them playing there. That's the only reason I can think of that. I think, you know, for our out of New York or out of, you know, out of our area folks, like ABC in Rio is legitimately like the poster child of the place that should have gone away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this was like an old crappy art space. Like the floor was like falling apart. It's a fucking nightmare. It's like literally, it's a scary place to see a show, not because who's attending, but you think you're going to end up in the basement.
That's right.
Because everything sucks. But like now on either side of those places are like sneaker boutiques that they have to buzz you in and buzz you out of.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like the fact that place is even thought about still existing is insane, because it's like that's a place that gentrification should have wiped off the map, that would have wiped off the map 20 years ago.
Yep.
And they managed to make it last. So I this wasn't to kind of totally just trip on us nostalgia about this stuff, but there's a Tom, what you said about that moment of when you walk to a venue and the door opens and you just hear music for a minute and it closes. It's like, that is fucking magic. And I don't,
it's crisp. It's fall.
Yeah. Yo, I get that from VFWs. I get that from DIY spaces. I never got that from a club. I never got that from a spot.
Up to the garden and feeling like, oh man, no, it's fucking awesome. I remember like I got that feeling at that One Step Closer show.
Yeah. Oh, that was such a great example. So was at a fire hall that the kids in One Step Closer found to do the record release show at, and it was packed. And it was just that magic feeling of when a place, and I don't know, maybe it's like, how do we differentiate this? It's a spot. I like you called it a spot, Tom, and I think that's real. It's a spot someone found, and the best spots are a place that people can find. I mean, there were a few. We were lucky, and shout out to dudes like Ian Adams, Ian Nolan, who did the work, and he had a spot here, Brick Moose, and then they found the Brick Fire spot, Brick EMS, and before that we had the Adams VFW, Adams Road VFW Hall, and
what about the Log Cabin?
Log Cabin still there? They now, just what was they that? Did one show. Long story short, it is, and this is super local for everybody, but it is.
Sorry, well, Kelly Ryan is a community. Like, famous shows there.
Shark Attack's played there, like a ton of stuff. I mean, Justice has played there. I mean, there's been all sorts of crazy stuff went through there. Have Hearts played there. I mean, it was a cool spot.
It's a famous place for our neighbor, for our area.
It is a community center in the middle of a neighborhood in Toms River, Manchester area. That someone's, you know, relative had some say so, and they were able to book shows there, and they rented out like a hall because their relative was familiar with the group of people and the kids who did it and this and that,
and they're nice kids,
yeah, you know, yeah, and was like, oh, and they all clean up, they all clean up afterwards, and yeah, they might be rowdy, but this is cool, and they try not to break things, and if they do, they pay for it, and that's just what it is. I bemoan. I you know, Eagle with the turning his head crying if we're losing those spots. And for those of you in scenes that have them, I'm looking at a spot like Denver where it seems like they have more than one. I'm looking at Fort Wayne. That's the one in Indiana that you shouted out, Gray and all those guys.
Yep.
Shout out to what they do, because I love their energy there with that.
It's become a place to go to now.
Yep.
Right.
That's the way that works, for sure.
A shout out to the folks down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, the MS Paint people who have some spot down there where shows are happening. Yo.
Boise.
Boise on top. They got the range. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and they found that spot.
That new spot. That spot. So this is our call. If you or someone you know is involved in a DIY spot, shout out from the mountaintops. Don't take it for granted. If you go to a spot you appreciate, see if you can volunteer or help or do something. It changes lives. Like, I don't think if I had started going to hardcore shows and it was only at clubs and that was my experience, I don't think I would have made it far.
Yeah, I mean, if my hardcore experience was Lemoore's.
Right.
Only?
Like, exclusively. Right, right.
Ah, man, I'd be like a fucking investment banker.
Yep. Well, that sounds all right, though.
You know, but think like, about this. You had QE2, right?
Yep.
Which was like a club, but it was like, felt like a DIY. It felt like you were in some weird spot.
It certainly
but then
did,
you think
yeah.
about, and then you think about it that Albany was one of those spots with that, despite the fact that we joke, had the luxury of having a split scene where there was at least two different scenes.
Sure.
And so you had to be aware of like, yeah, there's these shows that are happening in weird, you know, VFW halls and Water Valete and basements all over the place. You know what I mean? Like, you were going to those too. And so having that split experience, being able to see the club, but then also see, hey, this exists also outside of this format. I hope that the new audience who might be shuffling in from wherever, whether it's pop punk or fucking Turnstile or fucking whatever worlds are discovering hardcore, however they discover it, get to experience the shit that we're talking about. That door opening to like a Masonic hall and a bunch of kids and heat pouring out of the door and you hear crazy sound. Like, yo, that's so cool. It's cool as
hell. Are we resurrecting Book Your Own Fucking Life or what? I'm ready to go, fellas. Let's do this.
Does that even still exist? Ourselves up. No, but some version of it does. There's some version of it.
I mean, that was a fucking godsend. Like, before the internet became as ubiquitous as it is.
Yeah.
Like, folks, there was a book. Speaking to, like, everyone who's probably under 40 at this point.
Yeah, I think anyone under 38 for sure, and if you're under 42 but you just weren't paying attention much in those first 5 years,
you could literally book a full United States tour and Canada too.
Allegedly. Yeah, go on.
From I mean, you might be like playing someone's house and not like playing just for them,
yeah,
but like people would like put their information in, and like you could legitimately like route your own tour. Like, yeah, using this book, and it'd be like, call Bob after 6:30 on Thursdays.
Yes, right. If his mother picks up, hang up.
Yeah. Like, literally, and I was explaining this to my son, telling him how, like, yeah, when you wanted to call your friends, you'd call their house. And if they were cool, and
hopefully they'd be there.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Mr. Whatever. It's Bob. Is Jimmy there? And if they were really cool, they had their own line. And I was like, yo, that was – they either had some money or they just like really worked that angle, had that teen line. And I was like, I didn't get this conversation. He's too young. But think about that fear of calling a girl and having to call their parents' house.
Hell yeah.
Yo, people don't have to deal with that now? What are we talking about?
Living and be like, I have to like walk around the corner. Hopefully this like the cord will stretch far enough.
Yeah.
That'll so like my whole family doesn't hear me trying to like ask this like – person on a date or something.
Seem cool. Yeah, no. When my family got the cordless phone, the cordless house phone.
Game changer.
All right. But yo, so these guys, like you were saying, the Book Your Own Fucking Life, it would like basically break it down like, oh, there's a few people in Pawtucket that book shows. Bill books noise and grind shows. But if you play fast youth X crew hardcore, hit up Tim and here's his, and it was a way that literally a band who was on nothing, you don't have a band camp, you can just say, hey, we sort of sound like this, could you book us a show, we're going on tour, we're trying to do this, and you'd have a contact. And that's
it was incredible.
Patrick, you were in an unsuccessful band for a very long time, but you did tour.
Oh yeah.
Can you talk about the early days of End of Year? Because before I had ever even heard your band, you had done full U.S. tours.
Wow. Yeah. And there's more extreme versions of that, obviously. Like, shout out to Max Vick, who I met when he was like 17 touring Europe on a demo. That's why he's a booking agent today, most likely, is because his aptitude wasn't for being musical. His band sucked, but for being good at...
Sorry, Max.
Good at getting people on the phone, and certainly we saw what's the goddamn I think they're a Philadelphia band, from Cold Cuts,
CDC.
Thank you very much. The CDC was everywhere on less music than you find in a fucking Six Flags commercial jingle. You know what I mean? Like, there was no fucking music there, and they were still everywhere. And there's just, some people just have it like that, where they can really get on the phone with somebody and say, hey, I think I deserve to play your town. Here's why. And blah, blah, blah. And I was never good at that at all. It was, when we went out at first in End of a Year, it was a lot of Mike from the band at that time. It was his screamo contacts was a lot of the people. So we ended up playing, like, when we talk about places like Richmond, Virginia, most people are talking about Richmond, Virginia down to nothing. I'm talking about Richmond, Virginia, you know, like Wow Owls. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm talking about a different
basement
thing.
Show, like fully basement.
Fully basement shows. Shows, right. You know?
Fully basement. Completely separate scene.
And you know, I make fun of Screamo because I don't like the music, but shout out to Screamo for like hosting us for a lot of years and like making it so that we could tour. And, you know, I honestly like those shows and that experience. If anybody likes what I do today, it's because I became good at it through 10,000 hours of playing in front of 11 people. Yeah, you know what I mean, and that's right, that's what it was. So like, you know, I won't say
Tom, that's kind of like that's like the secret of the thing. Like, I heard Pat's band just off a split 7-inch recommendation. It was like, oh, this is really good, and then I kind of came to find out. Oh wait, like the recordings prior to that, hit or miss, you know, whatever. But that's subjective. Being nice, but they had already done the thing, and they had been doing it, and were really good live, like really good, like exemplary, even for a band that not as many people had heard of as should, because they had done the hours, and it was like, oh, clearly this band's going to do something that's notable, like this is going to be cool, and that was the. You know, formula that I had put together to go to basically, you know, force some hands to make the Revelation signing happen, because I was like, no, you guys don't understand. This band's going to be awesome. It's great. Like, this
might take 20 years, but the,
maybe, but it did. So that's, but I think that's true though. Like this idea of like, hey, we started playing shows and they were to no one, and, but we kept getting better and better. I'm sure, Patrick, you would not totally want anyone to judge you based on your first, you know, year of live performances there, but you wouldn't be embarrassed about it because you go, yeah, but now watch me now.
Yeah. I mean, look, like it's, you only get good at a thing. Most people, some people are very gifted, but most people, only get good at a thing through practice. And, if you're as bad at music as I am, it requires a lot of practice. And, but you do that through those shows. And honestly, like a younger, not younger people, but a younger band, I guess, asked me recently, do you ever get nervous going on stage? And I said, no. And the reason is not because of the failures that I've had at big festivals in front of thousands of people, but because I've played shows with dog shit on the floor. You know what I mean? It's like
there's nothing more awkward than singing to three people.
100%.
Put me in front of a sold out MSG. I'll hold it down. Put me in a basement looking at three people in the face.
Yo, some people truly fall apart. I think I shine in those places because I become like crowd work guy. You know what I mean? Which obviously not everybody likes, but it's
especially when there's three people and they're like, I can't leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I
can't walk out now.
Yeah. Now I'm just a subject to this person trying to entertain the other two. I think that there's, you know, I don't want to give old man advice, but if you are in one of those bands that hasn't played in front of more than 20 people in your life and you know, sometimes it's possible that you suck and you'll always suck, but I think it's better advice to just continue doing what you're doing. And
right, if you enjoy it, do it.
Yeah, oh yeah, fuck it. For sure. But I really feel like, you know, again, if I'm good on stage, and I think I am, but if other people feel that way, understand it's from playing those shows, you know? So, by the way, I just want to, demonym is the word I was looking for earlier, which is,
oh, thank you. The D word.
Yeah. Demonym is, what you call
Peppa
people.
Jean.
It's what you call people from a place, right? It's the word for yeah, the people from a place. So New Yorker, for example, but Brooklynite, but the Perth
Patroon,
Anthony, Patroon, yes, the Orange Fort Orange Defender. So the actual answer is sand groper for Perth person.
Put Perthson as a on the ballot next year. I think we win.
There's also Perthling, but.
Perthling could be a good Perthson.
There's Perthson, which is not a real one. There's but is good. I'll put it in the mix.
Really
there's
good.
There's Perthian, which I do not think is that good. There's Perthen, or no, Perth.
Perthite.
What about Perthian? Perthian.
Perthian.
Like that, not Perthian, Perthian.
Right. And then there's Perthite, but Sand Groper is actually popular as an informal. It's if you were curious, a Sand Groper is an insect that I think might only be Western Australian. It's disgusting. You wouldn't want to be compared to one at all. They're very disgusting looking in beans. But yes.
Well, so that was our love sonnet to the DIY venue. You've heard my plea. Just go out and make it happen. DIY venues are not just necessary, but like vital. And it is one of the distinguishing features of a music scene, in my opinion. I there's a lot of things in these like amorphous, like what is hardcore and what isn't hardcore? And I'm not saying that all music venues only play hardcore. Bands that play DIY venues are all hardcore. That's certainly far from the truth. But a distinguishing part of hardcore has always been this adherence to at least having the open mind to playing an alternate venue space. And, you know, partially for a lot of reasons.
I mean, this connection.
Yeah. No barriers, you know, whether there is a physical one or not. But like this idea of band and audience are not separated by a platform. It is to be one. It is a oneness that is interesting and curious.
I mean, your coworker's new metal band is not going to be able to do a weekend of shows at VFW halls.
True.
God, I hope not.
They're selling tickets to open for fucking Trapped or something.
Yep.
Jeez. Pay to play for Trapped. That's a hell. That's like the eighth ring of hell. Jesus.
Seriously.
So that parlays into a conversation I've been meaning to have with both of you that we have that we're kind of circling to. We've talked about the term adjacent, hardcore adjacent. Talked about that term for a long time. Shout out to Peter Rosenberg, who we stole it from, the term adjacent. Mm-hmm. Shout out to everybody who uses it. It's cool. It's a fun thing. I'm going to ask the question first, and then we can expand, but I think you'll both get what I'm asking, but I'm happy to elaborate. Is the term hardcore adjacent just kid gloves for saying this is not a hardcore band?
Yes.
Yeah, I think well,
it's a nice way of saying it.
Probably depends on who's saying it, honestly.
Well, and we never... I'll speak for myself, and I think you guys are on the same page. I don't think we've ever used it in a derogatory way. We never said it in a way to diminish, no, maybe to distinguish. Rally. Right, to distinguish. Right. We the adjacent thing kind of came from that Uncanny Valley terminology, which I really liked. This idea that hardcore adjacent stuff, which, I mean, right, like spade's a spade. Drug Church is an adjacent band.
Fact.
Do hardcore adjacent bands operate in the same way as hardcore bands do? My answer is no.
Well, I don't know. In 2022, there might be significant overlap there.
There are some blurred lines. That's right. And that's getting to the crux of the next piece of this conversation. Ooh. Hardcore adjacent bands, I don't think... I would not bind them to these like any sort of ethos or morality or any kind, you know, morality is not the right word, but ethos or kind of the long played keep hardcore in the streets and out of big business. The adjacent world doesn't seem to have a problem playing with big business. Does that mean the hardcore world should have a problem playing with big business? Not the band, who's actually pretty good and people should check them out.
Yep. No, it's a personal decision. I mean, look, like, here's what I've learned. You can put it on your back to be Mr. Hardcore if you want. It doesn't actually need your help. There's always going to be basements. There's always going to be, like a thing that irritates me is when somebody is peacocking, you know, what they call virtue signaling. When somebody's peacocking, but the effect is not clear. It's like you're just doing it to do it for your to put some clout on your back, right? So, like, what is the effect of being Mr. Hardcore? like being the most hardcore? What is the effect? Like, you think that you're what, preserving a culture? Because you're not, because it doesn't need you. You know what I mean? And furthermore, every Mr. Hardcore I ever met in my goddamn life, every fucking like, you know, like I'm doing it for the scene sort of motherfucker, that guy always leaves too. I've outlived all of them. You know what I mean?
I have a thought for you.
Hit me.
This isn't about that.
Actually, I'm going to say,
because I was going to say, hold on, go ahead.
Nobody misunderstands me. Mr. Hardcore is a vague term. I'm not actually talking about Joe, who actually has been around fucking forever. So
Norman Cormack.
I'm just talking about the guy who fucking puts it on his back to be like, this is,
I'm saving the scene.
Yeah. I'm saving the scene. And
they invariably become a DJ.
Right. Well, so here's my pushback to you. I'm not sure that they all disappear, and I don't think you dislike all of them, because we've seen examples of the person who puts it up front, the contrarian, the pushback, who sticks around, and we've seen it.
There's two people that stick around, people that love hardcore and fucking losers. It's been my experience almost to a man that the person that would seek to lecture me bows out well before I do. And it's just, I find it so annoying that I almost like, you can tell my patience is, I apologize. I know you have a point here, but you can tell that my patience is just so fucking like thin. For this particular individual, because it's like, you know, it doesn't need you. Like, there is always going to be a basement scene. There will always be a small club scene, and and all the anxieties that people have about, like, for example, Live Nation. Hey, I fucking hear you. Sometimes I do not like the experience, but
so these things are common enough now that I can talk about it without somebody being able to like pinpoint or triangulate, because I don't want to throw any names out there. But somebody hit me. And they were doing a collaboration with a big brand thing. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay.
I mean, whatever thing it is.
Sure.
And, you know, we laughed. I was like, it's kind of crazy. And they're like, yeah, it's fucking sell out, you know? And he's like, you know, it's kind of weird though. It feels weird that no one's giving us any shit. No one's giving us any pushback. I was like, yeah, it is kind of weird. And it wasn't that we don't think that anyone out there in a basement somewhere isn't, you know, like, fuck that shit, that corporate rock bullshit, whatever. But it was that it wasn't even a loud enough voice or murmur that it got back to them, you know, about their band or, you know, event or whatever it was. And the thing they were doing, it was like, oh, that's weird. We expected at least some dissent and got none. And that is an interesting thing that I wonder, in an age where we're seeing bands do collaborations with beer companies.
Companies, like bigger clothing companies.
So many. So I wonder about that, because I don't disagree with any of this at all. I think that there's always going to be someone who comes out. I think that music, particularly hardcore, is really reactionary. It's really responsive. Something pushes like this, and this, you get the pushback to this. It's secular. You see all these things.
Right. Those voices are quieter, though.
Are we passing through some sort of threshold?
Yeah. I mean, think about what we talked about with Strife, right?
Yeah.
Strife asked for $1,000.
Yep.
And they draw like 400 to 500 people everywhere.
Yep.
Like context for everyone. Context for everyone. Strife was the band that kids in my high school who didn't really like hardcore liked.
Yep.
Like, they were one of the few that transcended. Yes.
So them asking for $1,000 completely reasonable. People came out with shirts.
Yep.
Because they had a guarantee. Now I feel like younger folks, it's kind of like, you know, fucking get that, you know, whatever, Paps, get that Supreme money, like, you know, like, or get whatever, whoever you're being able to collaborate with. There are people that take offense to it, but those folks, like, it used to be like the ratio has changed.
Listen,
it went from like 80-20 to 20-80.
I just tried out these headphones that I told you about that have the you know, they just play full
the goodies.
Yeah, I tried them out in the studio watching the Turnstile Taco Bell commercial. Like, so it's people don't care, and
you could really hear that crunch.
Yeah, well, it's
nacho fries.
Here's the thing, and I think that this is a difficult conversation for a lot of reasons, but here's the number one is a lot of times when people are airing their grievances with somebody else's choices, I won't say it's jealousy because you don't know, you know, I can't always determine what people want, but I will say that there is just some baseline hateration that manifests out of a lot of people. And
talk about Mary J. Blige.
Yeah, there's 100%. She can smell that hateration. And it's
– And it's dancery.
So it's a tough thing because what if you have a valid – complaint or valid, you know, just an opinion. And I think a lot of people are scared to air that stuff anyway, because they don't want to appear as a hater. Cause certainly when I see the people on Twitter taking shots at certain shit, you've seen the tide is starting to turn on these big festivals, you know? I saw people shitting on those big festivals, and it reads like hater shit. And here's the reason. I don't go to those big festivals unless I'm playing them, and I don't expect you to. I don't care, honestly. But for a lot of, particularly the older bands, a lot of you don't go to their shows, and this is how they. But you love them on a festival for some reason, and this is how they make their money. And to be mad at these festivals for being uncool when it's like when you are not attending the shows from these bands that you think are lowering themselves for playing these shows, playing these festivals, is magical thinking. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just stupid. So you read as a hater, and I don't know. I feel that this is a topic that is mostly dead. And in the places that it is still alive or will pop up every once in a while, I think it's muted by the fact that people don't want to look like quote unquote that guy, you know? So it's a difficult thing to talk about, period.
Well, so to me, I agree. I think it's good because a lot of times when you're being that guy, it fucking sucks. It's like lame shit, and you're caring about something that you, to be honest, you shouldn't care about. Your commentary on the festival thing is exactly right. You wouldn't catch me. When I was 18, 19, 20, I can't tell you how excited I was to go to a 30 plus band hardcore festival. I was so excited. You know why? Because I had the mood, time, and interest for it. Then I did it for many years and did it. And you know what? Now, less so. Doesn't mean I didn't have a good time when we were all out at Sound and Fury. That was super fun.
Super fun.
That was a blast.
Super fun. But I didn't see every band who played. It probably would have been nice to see more, but it was cool. I enjoyed it at the level I enjoyed it. And really, that's what I ask of adults, and to not take away the joy from others. That said, the flip side of this coin is, are we losing people speaking passionately about things they really enjoy and care about out of fear of perception of being lame for expressing things they love?
Sure. Sure.
And I think people are afraid of misspeaking.
Oh yeah. It's a weird era where people don't want to get caught on the record. You know what I mean? And look, for somewhat good reason, I asked a question in our group chat. Hey, is hardcore suffering from the fact that it's attempting to look too mature, that it's not willing to get into the weeds on young people bullshit idiocy? And Bob immediately sent me an example of a kid online acting like a fucking moron and saying, no,
the conversation stopped right there.
I think we're fine. Here's the thing is that, you know, since the message board era and on, it's possible to develop a reputation that you cannot escape. And if you are that dude that's jumping out, people look, if you were like against Turnstile going to Israel a few years ago, it's like, you know, now somebody could just pop that out when you're going to the Turnstile show. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're like, yeah. if you were like
the big, receipts are everywhere.
Yes. If you were the big hater, right? They could break it out like you voted for the Iraq war. You know what I mean? They're like, here you go. Look at this.
And when you said yay.
Right. Yeah. So it's a problem. People are afraid to be caught on record. People are afraid of looking embarrassing. I think there'll be some pushback to that. I think there'll be like young people that are like, hey, look. Actually, nothing matters. My mom's got an OnlyFans and I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, it is a different moment. It's a different era. We're all caught on forever on the internet. And now I'm going to YOLO this
yeah.
shit.
Who gives Did a you fuck? See that video of the dude squeezing a bot fly out of his face? Yeah, it's crazy shit, dude.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Pat's going to lose Twitter though.
I hate that.
Super, super gross, dude. It's the food for thought shit that is being disaffected and kind of realizing how trivial a lot of stuff is. Does it minimize people's willingness to express passion and express things they enjoy and do so in a, man, maybe earnest is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it, way? Without fear, like you both have pointed at, fear of it being held against you and been like, yo, remember this motherfucker took something a little too serious? I get it. And I'm not talking about, you know, allegations. I'm not talking about
no
accusations. I'm talking about somebody feeling like, yo, I don't like that this band did this. 99.9% of the time. Who gives a fuck?
Well, also, I'm going to say
5 years later, no one even remembers that situation happened, like some trivial bullshit. But I think those moments when someone cares, you know, sick of it all, Born Against debate. What the fuck were they arguing about? What?
It's gibberish.
Not having the lyric sheet. Well, the lyric sheet was
gibberish.
Censored.
Right. Gibberish.
Like
right.
something. Yeah, absolutely. Like.
But that moment of passion stimulated interest in a band that was, you know, slightly above average, Born Against.
So, but I mean, could you imagine? Oh, but back then, they had the privilege of like, this was the biggest thing in their lives.
Yeah. Right.
Like Sam McFeeters could not think of something else more important than that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This, I mean, that's.
But now everyone knows everything. So like you'd be remiss to be like, I'm arguing with Sick of It All in WNYU right now while, you know, fucking this is happening here. Someone else is dying over here. Who's, you know, like we're overloaded with information that the trivial shit seems that much more trivial.
At the show last night, I'm in Perth, Australia, which it's not like a fucking – it's not like the Outpost 31 from fucking the Thing. But it's, you know, it's the furthest fucking city from anywhere. And people are talking about citizens' arrest. Oh, isn't the one guy in that band kind of MAGA now? You know what I mean? Like I'm on the other side of the fucking planet.
I know. Right. Meanwhile, 1993, most people couldn't pick like if you weren't a Citizens Arrest fan, you couldn't pick anybody out of a lineup.
No chance. Well, NYU kills fucking monkeys and they fucking know it.